Thank you, Saskia.
Yeah.
I wonder if the fuzzy logic that you talk about is a cousin of the ambiguity that we heard something of this morning.
Yes.
I think we're trying to open this up into a conversation or a discussion, but I'd like to ask Mr. Wu Jiang to begin to talk about his responses to that. But also, one thing that struck me from this morning was Qing Yun Ma talked about urbanity without edges. And it struck me that one question to ask about Shanghai might be whether it's a city that actually has any limit. Is there an end to the population of Shanghai? Is there a moment when Shanghai stops being a city and becomes something else?
Well, I have a very similar understanding of Sassen. And for my understanding, the urbanity of a city shouldn't be a standard model for a city. Now, for my understanding, it's much more important for the urban variety than the idealist. Because I always believe one city, you know, the people who live in the city is much, much more important than the city itself. So the people who live in the city should be have their own living style, living model. There's never been a standard model of a city. You know, we say we imitate any model from New York, London, anyways. Shanghai is Shanghai, London is London, New York is New York. I just remember suddenly, many years ago, I talked with Professor Zhang about the modernity, urbanity. From my understanding, I think the urbanization has never been a final result. It should be a process. We always need more urbanization, even many years later. So what urbanization should be is not sprawl of the space, sprawl of the high rise, sprawl. It always depends on different time. For this time, this moment, people in Shanghai, they need more living space. That's why all these towers be built. And then probably they need more urban space, the greenery. Then we pay more attention to that. Then I don't know, after that, people maybe need another different things. So what the urban form should be is totally depends on the people who live in the city instead of ideal model. I never agree there is an ideal model for city. Because I've been in many, many cities of the world, each of them has their own characters. You know, what we say, this city is good or not, we never compare with the standard model. We always say the people who live in the city like it or not. And actually, nowadays in Shanghai, most people live in such kind of special way that most of them like it. From my understanding. So I think, you know, for the urban planner or the, you know, government officials or developers or any people who is power should learn, should understand what the people who live in the city needs. Never, never imagine the city from a book. I used to be teaching in university for many years. I always try to talk to the students, you know, teach the students what an idealist city should be. But finally, when I move out, left the university, I just suddenly understand the reality is never like academic, you know, from the book. The reality is always make the balance. You cannot say which is much more important than the other. You know, we say the environmental protection is important, the better space is important, the historical preservation is important, transportation is important. Finally, most people will say economic development is more important. But actually, finally, we find nothing is more important than the others. We always try to make the balance between all the factors. So if you ask me, what do you think? Is there a limitation of this high-rise development? I say yes, in this moment, the people just start to understand, you know, it seems, you know, this high-rise too much for nowadays. So we need more urban space, we need more greenery, we need more, you know, the public spaces instead of the building itself. And actually, this is on base of this moment. Because we have such much of the high-rise, then we understand we need more urban space. That doesn't mean we never know we need the urban space before that. We can only say that time when the people living less than 2 square meters 10 years ago, it's no sense to talk about the public space and even history. But now we start to talk about that. And then probably in Western developed countries, you talk about different things. You think we need more, you know, responsibility to help the third world. So it's a different stage. Probably a few years later, we can understand, you know, in the past 15 or 20 years, the Shanghai, I cannot say the other cities, but I can only say Shanghai. In the past 20 or 15 years, this model of the development of Shanghai may be the best way for the city because China is different from all the countries of the world. The land is too limited. The source, natural source, is too limited. We have too large population. We have to put so big, large population into a limited space. How do we solve that? We cannot, you know, develop the city as the so-called suburbanization. You know, we make the people far, far away from. It's cost loss of the, you know, transportation and the natural resource and all the cost. We have to put them into as small space as possible. But finally, we find that this also causes another different problem. When the people, all the people, put into these towers, then people say, oh, we need, you know, more public space, more open space. So we always, I said, the urban planning is never like drawing a blue drawing. The urban planning is always like the driving a car, you know, they always to control, to overcome the little mistakes, and then make it make mistakes as less as possible. But sometimes we always have a wrong understanding. We always, you know, suppose there is an ideal model of a city. There should be, you know, a suitable plot ratio, population, transportation, you know, greenery. But finally, we find that there is never been this kind of city. So what the conclusion of mine is, what we should do is always find the balance between different factors of the reality instead of academy.
Thank you. Okay. We have in the audience Zhang Jin from Soho, which is a company which has actually struggled to build within the Chinese context to create, one could say, cities. And I wondered if perhaps she could talk to us a little bit about whether she has an ideal view of what urbanity can be, or whether she has another view of how one achieves that.
Can you hear? Yeah, okay. I wanted to say that I really agree with Mr. Wu. Mr. Wu?
Yes.
It's, you know, this morning I was listening to this whole, well, not the whole, the part of the discussions, that I had one thing I wanted to make a comment, which is, if you know how the Chinese city master plan, the process of how this is made, probably many of those comments, you know, will just naturally be put aside. Because, you know, like Mr. Wu said, everything in this country, and perhaps not only in this country, is a result of keeping everything balanced. I mean, I know that in Beijing, the way master plan is usually made by, if this year we wanted to do a new master plan, the planners would invite maybe 20 architects around the world, each to give a proposal. And usually three would be shortlisted, and then they would ask to come in and say, of the three, everyone has something unique and great, but your job is to go back and combine the three into one and come back with that perfect one. And it's at this moment that competition or the greatness of any or the character of any plan falls apart, because there is no such thing as putting the three good plans into one and to make the one even better. And so then what happened is that the architects will go back and come back with the one that they just, whatever they think, it's a combination of the three, and one will be chosen. And then when that one is chosen, you will have a lot of people in the planning bureau or beyond the planning bureau. Everyone comes in to make a comment, and all those comments will be incorporated. So the final result is basically the balance between everyone. What I would try to say is that it's never so pure as in one person's notion, one person's philosophy, one concept, and which is good or bad. It just doesn't work that way in reality. I mean, maybe people still think that, like, Paris was mostly planned by Osman, so there is an equivalent of Chinese Osman in Shanghai or in Beijing. I can tell you there is no such person. And the planning, basically the planning bureau, Mr. Wood knows this better than me, that no one has the final say and everyone has the final say. So it's in a way that, while we're sitting here talking about what's better, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, the most important thing is to understand that actually we don't have such a power to make such decisions. I mean, the more I do development, I understand that so much of the individual project is subject to the master plan of the whole city. And yet the master plan of the whole city, it's such a random decision, and it's such a random result of everyone's comment. In a way that you probably would just leave it to the God to decide. But when it comes to individual project, I can proudly say that developer has the final say of making a decision on whose architecture that we like, that fits into the market and so on. But having worked with many architects around the world, and also one thing I want to share with everyone is we as a developer is struggling between bringing good architecture that would fit into our city urbanization and also fit into what the market we interpret would want. But in the same time, we're also working in these projects of the scale that no one has seen before. And most of the architects that we approach or we work with have no idea about what's 1 million square feet or 2 million square meter, no idea about what does that mean. When you are dealing with one building that is more like an object of art, and your mentality switch from that into a scale of a development of a million square meter, which would easily house 50,000 people shopping, working, living there. That's a totally different mentality. You no longer can treat this project like an art object. You no longer can just think that, it's this static versus that static, what is, or the philosophy behind it. So that's another thing is the challenge between great creative architects and their architecture work and the massive scale of what we're dealing with on day-to-day basis in China. One project that I worked with a Japanese architect called Riken Yamamoto is of such scale of 8 million square feet, 20 towers, high-rise towers, many of them 35 stories. Everything has to be built within 4 years. Everything has to be sold within 2 years. this is a scale that we're talking about, and I think that, and also dealing with the zoning policies that the government has, and many of it is the inheritance from the old planning regime, and we continuously to deal with that. Someone mentioned the sunflower effect of the sunlight facing south. Somebody mentioned this morning, right? I mean, Yamamoto actually has a solution for that, which is turning every tower 30 degrees eastward, and so that every side of the building would get the sun. I mean, that's one solution of dealing with Chinese, maybe not as flexible zoning policy.
But what is in your head when you actually have to face that 10 million square feet? It's not an ideal utopia. It's not architecture. But what is it?
I don't know what it is, actually. It's true, it's not a utopia. But I mean, when we started doing that project, we had one idea. Is we know the site of that scale of 180,000 square meter site, which used to be a machine tool factory. That factory was state-owned, went bankrupt, and also the city government of Beijing had the intention of moving all of the industrial part outside of the Beijing city and turning that into a cosmopolitan center. So when we had that land, we had an idea of building a small city within a city. And for that, we talk about many ideas. In fact, Yang Ho was in was the panel of jury when we selected Yamamoto's design. I remember Isuzaki was another contender, and Rocco Yim from Hong Kong is another one. But basically, the reason we chose Yamamoto's is because that was the one that was closest to what we imagined the small city within a city, which is it creates a lot of little spaces, small space, small urban space that would allow many possibilities to happen. Versus, for instance, Isuzaki had a monumental project as a center with fountains, a highest tower. You know, it just doesn't allow any other possibility other than I could imagine Mao, you know, going up to the top of the building and waving hands to everyone. You know, other than that, you know, I couldn't see people just, you know, live there and create many possibilities. That was the reason why we chose the Riken Yamamoto's, you know, small city within city idea.
Well, I was asked to co-chair this panel. We were discussing the possibility of inviting some of the local writers who are writing about Shanghai, but we failed to do so. Well, after listening to Professor Sassen's topic, and I really appreciate some of the ideas, the cityness. And my background is the urban culture. So this morning I heard a lot of about the architecture, urban planning, some theories, but unfortunately now if you are talking about the culture, urban culture, I think it's very closely related to cityness. And the last time I still remember with Mr. Yunhe, we met in another case, well, a famous architect from Japan, called Itotoyo. He's talking about his masterpieces. But what is behind that is his cultural consideration. He goes everywhere, just reflect his ideas about his understanding of the city, his understanding about his works. So my question would be, because I forgot who said that, city is the oldest cultural art, a cultural work. So I'd like to ask some of the architects to discuss the, you are making one design. For example, Mr. Ma, I saw some of your masterpieces in Ningbo and other cities. While you are designing this building, what is behind, what's your philosophy, what's your cultural consideration? How your design would be in coherence with this city? Is it possible?
Actually, a good question. As a busy practicing architect, we kind of appreciate the question to actually pull us out of the drafting situation and think of this. Actually, for the last couple of years, our practice is mostly based on what Mrs. John has kind of described in a nice way. It's mostly efficiency, repetition, possibility of speed of construction, and we have a lot of intelligence that actually spend on those three issues. And I think it's actually, I mean, my colleague would criticize me, how can you say that? But actually, I think cultural issues are not really totally defined by architects, and actually buildings are not, actually only contributes a small portion of it. I think it's the civil quality of a city, is the life aspect of the city that constitutes the culture. I think architects should only be alert of those, but not kind of standing out saying, I'm gonna create a culture for the city, or creating a culture that somehow defined or concretized by my buildings. Of course, we have many professional skills that could enable us to be sensitive, more sensitive, but I think the fundamental issue is to meet the quite practical ground. This is, I mean, I don't know whether that fulfills your curiosity, interest to know how we think. But I also wanted, since I got the microphone, I want to get back to the fussiness, the fussity. I think I really like the term. Quickly realized, actually, the city is beautiful because it's fussy, it's in the making. Actually, it's not the city itself provide all kind of opportunities for all kinds of people. It's that in making process, the process in making that provide all the opportunities. And I think Paris doesn't really offer opportunities. Rome, Zurich, Bordeaux, I visit a lot of nice cities, but I barely see opportunities there because it's made. So, but there is, I think then if fuzziness is the opportunity generator, and I think there's a huge challenge to everybody sitting here, is how to make things in the making permanently. Because the natural tendency is in the making and being made. So it's a kind of entropy theory. It just, when energy goes in order way and it dies, right? That's basically life cycle. And then, so I quickly draw the fuzziness into what another word that Saskia was kind of using, instrumentality. That's really interesting because instrumentality is not a goal. It's to help the goal to fulfill its end. And sometimes you don't really have to know the goal, but you really have to be so specific about instrumentality. Give you an example in the nuclear industry. The instrumentality counts so important that the accelerator of nuclears became another science. So I'm thinking, can we, I use science, that can we develop a kind of a scientific, technological, intellectual energy that actually kept the fuzziness from being made? Continue the fuzziness. And relate to the public space, what I have said this morning. I think there are some, in my mind, serious aspects behind it. I think the Chinese way of life needs no program, but a script. Where our life is never programmed, I don't think. So sometimes you say, oh, 30, 40 years of hard communism, how come people were smiling so hard? Actually, it doesn't, it's not programmed. People have their own script and narrative to organize their life. So I think it's narrative versus program we talked to in. And secondly is, Chinese society is not ritual as Western society, which I think is it explains the religious free environment. I think that way, public space became a bit not in such a demand as in the Western civilization. And then lastly is the family value of Chinese life. I think Western critiques commented on the current situation of morality, and I would say the family value in China is actually a vertical family value, not horizontal. It's not a value with your wife and children, it's a value with your parents. So it's a vertical family value that somehow really holds a society together. And that's, I think that if you think those aspects in Chinese lives and you start to realize public life, public space actually is less needed. Compared to the Western theory, I think public space have to be related to a civil society. In the Western, you have individual, family, some kind of union that's bigger than family, but less than state government. And public space exists at the middle portion, is the civil society. But this civil society, there's two levels, family and community, trade union, religious group, club, you know, Ivy Club, all this organization that's bigger in the than the family. It doesn't exist in China, if you really think. Chinese don't social in that way. We don't go to churches. We don't go to trade unions. We don't go to... So family alone constitutes the middle portion of the whole various civil scale of society in China. That also explains if public space is related to the civil, various civil society, and then that's where the public space kind of falling into another scenario in China, in Chinese family life. Enough said. Thank you.
Can I just say one quick thing? I just want to very good. I want to recover two points that you just mentioned because I think this is exciting. One of them is if cityness or the public, whatever we're trying to capture here, resides at least partly in the possibility of making rather than that which is made. So in that sense, Shanghai is more interesting than Paris. That then produces a contradiction that you alluded to too, architecture and its permanence, you know, even though it is, of course, not forever, but still. And here I have questions to architects. And one of them comes back to what Ricky said this morning. While there is a kind of permanence in architecture, in buildings, at the same time, these buildings can morph. Now, then the question is, are some shapes, are some forms more susceptible to morphing and to being remade, even though the walls stay the same, than others? And that's sort of an interesting question. And I think, in fact, at LSE, there has been an effort to establish that, right? And the other one is sort of a general question to architects. I mean, if we take this notion of cityness as an attempt to strip urbanity, et cetera, from its Western sort of rich history, are there architectures that signal that our iconographies for cityness that are really quite different from what we have associated with architectures, that civic architectures, you know, architectures that sort of contribute to public space, et cetera. I mean, in other words, opening up the range of typologies would be one kind of language to use in terms of what are the architectures that are possible so that the networked office may well contribute to cityness, even though from some other perspective we might say it redeploys an activity all over the globe and hence it takes away from urbanity.
Enrique, you want to?
Yes. Well, if we ask a child whether he or she is happy at school, they will always say they are happy. Yet, if you change them from one school to another, many times they become much happier than they used to be. So the fact that people will say that they are satisfied with their city is no proof that this is a great city. They don't know much different. I really think from this morning we have been in this dilemma where we have been trying to say whether Western or non-Western, and then being very careful not to offend, yet offense has been taken. And yet Saskia, very academically, yet at the end, her last word is cityness is being constituted even in a built environment that works against it. So clearly she thinks there are some environments, built environments that work against cityness, and some that works towards cityness. So I really think if we could not say that a city is better than another, really a meeting like this would be useless, because if everything is the same, nothing is different, so we should be at home and not be discussing about anything. I mean, I at least am not so attracted just by the academic disquisitions, but from practical things that can make people live better and others. So I do believe that people are, some cities are better than others. And as I have the privilege, the debatable privilege of not coming from a great city such as London or Paris or something like this, so nobody could argue that I am proposing to impose my values on others. I do believe, however, that we have been trying to make this effort to say that people are very different in China and that people are so different. I really think the more and more I have had the luck of being in many places in the world, and the more I know people, the more I think we are much more similar than different. So it so turns that we all love cars, you know. Then we are all equal when it's dealing with cars or when we deal with iPods or with brand purses or watches. But then when it comes to cities, no, we are totally different. Then each one has to do something, you know. I do not believe this is the case. And on the contrary, we can have possibilities to find some things that are better in some cities than others. For example, I think Shanghai's network of bicycle ways is something that London and New York could certainly imitate, and they would become much better cities than they are now. And this is not a minor issue. This can be a very important issue to improve dramatically. The fact that a humble person, that a child could go about safely in a bicycle would radically change the quality of life in a city. I also think we have a long history of cities, and some areas of cities have worked well and have been redone, and we want to protect them and they keep maintain value, and some other areas clearly are a failure and have to be demolished. So we have learned something. I mean, everything is not so relative, because really, I would just say that anywhere people need to go out into public spaces, I think anybody would recognize that a good city is one where it's good for a city that people would like to be outside and be with other people, meet people they don't know. I mean, anybody, I think you need to be an urban expert to realize that the Bund is a wonderful place in a city, that people want to be there, that people from all over the city in Shanghai meet there, that old people, young people, people from different places in China. And while some people may not be in agreement that an elevated highway may be good or bad, I think everybody is in agreement that the Bund is a good thing. So I think, and I like to go to the Lagos, because I was really, even though I admire profoundly Rem Koolhaas' work as a, just as a regular citizen that don't know anything about architecture, I was disturbed by his Lagos, when he says that Lagos is wonderful, even though it's a mess and it's horrible. This is really a different kind of values, you know? You really have to be into it. Have we asked the people in Lagos where they like this? Have we asked them? Because, I mean, I don't think the result of some business decision, if 5 or 10 rich people in Lagos make decisions of how to put some horrible billboards in the middle of a plaza, so this reflects the culture of the Lagos people? Have anybody asked them? The fact that there are some business decisions in any society, here perhaps as well, some business decisions that are made, does not mean that it reflects what the people want, much less what could make them happiest. When tradition is what creates certain type of environment, it does not necessarily mean here that is the best that could be made. I just like to propose that I do believe, and I may be very naive, but I do believe that there are certain ways to do cities that are much better than others, and I have been very happily learning things, and I would love to have a few bonds in Colombian cities with rivers or coasts.
could I ask Mr. Wu Jiang whether he thinks some cities are better than others also?
I just know a lot of people in Shanghai have a very similar opinion of him, meaning particularly the mayors of Shanghai.
Okay, well, Mr. Penalosa talked about his point of views, and I think mostly we are sharing his value about cities. So still I'm talking about just try to draw this topic to the culture again, and I think that the culture itself is something you could value this city. The culture is behind the physical expression. And also the public space. Well, last year we worked with a professor in German, in Bauhaus University, also talked about public space. And I think in which different people have different understandings about the public space. And it plays a different role in the Western cities and in Eastern cities. So I'd like someone to explain, they're still mostly focusing on the urban culture. To talk about how do you view about the cityness, especially in terms of culture, urban culture. Well, Mr. Peng, to talk about something.
So I think in Shanghai, we are talking about the Shanghainese. But the problem for Shanghai is most of the Shanghainese cannot speak Shanghai dialect. So that's become a major issue. To some extent, we are saying we are losing Shanghai culture tradition. So that's, we say now, at the moment, we have a population of 70 million. Then our projection is that in the year, in 20 years' time, Shanghai, the upper limit of the Shanghai's population may grow up to 30 million. So there were another more than 30 million growth in Shanghai. So at this moment, I think it's very difficult for us to say what is the spirit of Shanghai, what is the culture of Shanghai, because the spirit of the city is the spirit of the city residents. But at this moment, the residents is greatly changed if we compare the current citizenship with the citizenship 20 years ago. At this moment, about half of the Shanghainese are come from outside of Shanghai. They are regarded as the new Shanghainese rather than the got these kind of things. Then we found really Shanghai is divided with the very traditional Shanghai, mainly in the suburban areas, and with the modern global city in the center of downtown area of Shanghai. So sometimes I think that for me, sometimes it's very difficult to simplify what is the culture of Shanghai, what is the mentality of Shanghainese.
It's culture of Shanghai.
Yeah. Then I think that's my understanding about the Shanghai's culture. But of course, also I would like to address two special conditions for Shanghai to develop such a city. The first is put Shanghai's development in a general scope dimension of China's urbanization. But in China, we have only about 40% of Chinese are living in the urban areas. The government plan is in the next 10 years, every year there will be increment of more than 30 million rural population become urban residents. Really, this is a very big, ambitious program. So Shanghai definitely will become a major place to absorb more migrants into Shanghai. And also, in the next 20 years, in China, there will be another 200 million increase of the total population. Majority of this population will live in China's cities. So this makes the city not only become a center for economic development or center for culture tradition, but also for the center for accommodation for the increasingly larger population in China. So this, I think, is quite making the China's city, China's urbanity totally maybe different from other cities in the world. And also another thing is about the time dimension of the Shanghai's development. When Professor, the senator, you said about this kind of different styles, the time dimensions of that. You go through the Taylorist and go to the social democrat, go to network, all this kind of development. In the Western society, you take about more than 100 years to do that. But in China, we only take, especially in Shanghai, only 10 years. We will finish all these kind of things. So in that, I think that make Shanghai's urban development is almost totally different from many other cities. Then, of course, when we try to learn good things from the Western developed countries, we also learn a lot of the bad things from the developed countries. I think especially from some of American. I'm not totally against America, but especially in terms of lifestyle. especially life, the consumption patterns. For example, in Shanghai, we consume as a more than 10 times what is the small city in the southwest part of China. For example, in small city in Yunnan, And we Shanghainese, we spend 10 times energy, create 10 times rubbish than all these kind of small cities in the these kind of small inland China's Chinese cities. And also these become some kind of problems of the maybe the disadvantage since for the cityness or the urbanity in China. In China, the six biggest cities with less than 10% of the total Chinese population, they are responsible for more than half of the China's total consumption expenditures. So this create greater this kind of the regional rural urban diversities and create a bigger gap between the rich and the poor, between the bigger cities and the small cities. So for me, I'm still as a social scientist, I'm really, when I learn more about the Shanghai's culture, then I become much more puzzled about what is the real Shanghai's culture. Thank you.
I think we're moving towards a break at a quarter past, but I'd actually like to bring in Yongho Chang to respond to some of those points and to ask anybody in the audience who wants to jump in thereafter. So there's a man here bursting to jump in, so Yongho, would you mind waiting for a moment?
Yeah. I came here a very, very conventional bureaucrat, and I feel after 24 hours completely deconstructed. And my current view, and you must put me right immediately, is that I hope many of you have played a computer game called SimCity, where you create your own computer-generated city. And you accord to all these principles of a bit of water, a river, a lake, nice little municipal square, some museums, maybe an opera house around the square, nice subway, public parks, cycleways, pedestrian ways, top quality designs, sub-regional centres linked by underground because they don't interfere, your power stations and your factories on the edge of the town, mixed high-quality housing. And then you realise that what you've created is Brasilia, Saint-Quentin-d'Yvelines, Canberra, Milton Keynes, Ottawa, Pretoria, all perfectly horrible places. And I'm left now with a sentiment, and I've got a headache and I've got to stop, and we must talk afterwards, that actually what I want is, in my urban areas, complete anarchy, let it rip, fiddle around with it endlessly, mix it all up, close all planning departments, and give architects just one job, surprise us.
I like to make a little brief comment. Of course, he would love chaos so long as he has a park for his children nearby that will not appear out of chaos. But of course, out of some conscious decision and investment and all of this. So it sounds all very nice. Again, it's a very creative talk, but in fact, I think there are some decisions, and I'd like to one just to comment on what I think we share in my city with Shanghai. And it's the fact that our cities that are different from London or Paris are only going to be created. I mean, what the Shanghai of 250, it's only maybe one third today or less. And so there is one great opportunity to really not to copy precisely, perhaps I am thinking more of the country, of how to avoid many of the mistakes that have been made in other countries. So I think this is a fantastic opportunity. I think that if we were to give the mayor of London a magic wand and we would tell him, look, you could disappear two-thirds of your city, and now you can redo it again. would you let this to chaos and randomness, or would you rather like to do perhaps a few a thing here or there?
We need to talk about surprises, young
Harry. I'll try. There are first of all too many provocative questions and personalities to respond. So my surprise is that I may talk to myself. I'm wondering one thing is that we are talking about, you know, I know you're from Bogota, I've never been there. You're saying it's not Paris or Shanghai or London, but we have been, in a way, talking about big cities, you know, metropolis. And then I have been thinking, you know, I'm very much interested in this conversation, but what kind of a city my office is really working in? I think there are two cities. It's kind of a city without cityness. It's a non-city because the roads are so wide and buildings are always isolated. And then we're giving this one piece of land to do a project. It's in the city, it's not. Because the next building would be 6 meters away and we barely see it, and it has nothing to do with this building. Of course, we are talking about the very typical kind of a new city in China. And another kind of a city is similar to this one, but it's different, is this new or Chinese suburbia. And it's way out there, still in the farming field. And then luckily we were the first one to build something there. We have no neighbors, nothing. And then these two cities are the city we are really have been working with for the past decade or so, and then we are still doing that. So in a way, and for us, there is a search for the city-ness. Almost we have to. Otherwise, we can't imagine why people would desire a city at all. And then what we have been trying is to develop these kind of micro-urbanism. Even the city possibly happens within the building. In fact, the best probably kind of a city in the building, this is a real surprise, it's there in Beijing. Everyone comes to Beijing, I would like to tell you the place. It's a shopping place within a double-loaded corridor office building. And then it's kind of a Kafka-esque. You knock on one door, it opens, could be a real office. Now they put on the sign saying, do not disturb us, we're a real office. And then it could be a little shop. Of course, for the most part, they sell the fakes, the fake Gucci, fake Prada, and so on. And then you go on and on in this building. And then this particular group of people would appreciate the merchandise there. And then actually you socialize there. You meet your friends there and maybe go somewhere else. So I like to think that there is the need for the city after all. And then for us, and I think really has to develop all kinds of alternative cities or really urbanities in that regard, to kind of really deal with the present situation of urbanization in China.
Thank you for the surprise. I think we should now break for coffee for 15 minutes, so we can be back here at 4:30.
I do think
thank
we
you.
Great. Thank you for getting a bit of closure, because the point is that Western notions of public space are very...